Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. Jim, we start with the good. And a couple of months ago, this was only seen as this faint rumor that people assume probably wouldn't happen because of the calendar quickly running out of time for Joe Biden to even think about getting into the presidential race. But over time, we've seen stories about donors being ready to abandon Hillary and head to Biden. We've seen people join the draft Biden effort that are considered to be pretty major Democratic players. Then he met with Elizabeth Warren over the weekend. And on Monday, we got this little nugget from Josh Earnest in the White House briefing room.
The president has indicated his view that the decision that he made, 7 years ago now, to add Joe Biden to the ticket as his running mate was the smartest decision that he had ever made in politics. And I think that should give you some sense of the president's view of Vice President Biden's aptitude for the top job.
So, Jim, you've got the president effectively giving Biden the blessing, although Earnest says no endorsement would come until later in the campaign, if at all, before the Democratic nomination. But obviously, you've got Democrats panicking. Joe Biden seems like the next best thing. And so we could actually get a pretty intense fight here for the Democratic nomination when just a couple months ago we assumed it was a cakewalk.
Yeah, this is wonderful for us, just for sheer entertainment value. It does say something interesting. I mean, it was not that long ago that David Axelrod, who you figure would be still pretty well plugged in with the Obama team, was saying he didn't think Biden should run. And now all of a sudden he's out telling the Associated Press, Biden as the president's partner would be closely identified with the Obama legacy, which is definitely not don't run, Joe. You know, look, Barack Obama can't say Biden shouldn't run because basically he's saying, look, the guy I picked is a walking joke. We think he's crazy and he shouldn't be president. He's been very effective assassination insurance, but that's, yeah. I'm actually working on a piece for National Review on this. I don't know about you, Greg. I feel a slight chill when the thing about the possibility of Biden running and taking on Hillary and winning the nomination, because I think he really could be a much tougher opponent.
Right.
Hillary is uniquely bad in a lot of ways. If Biden wins the nomination, the email server issue goes away.
Mm-hmm.
I think people like Joe Biden, even getting aside from the recent sympathy of him losing his son. Even we on the right kind of find him as this crazy, wacky, drunk uncle who just comes around and blurts out, as Jonah Goldberg famously quoted, get these squirrels off of me. Everybody just goes, oh, that Joe. What a guy. He's gaffe-proof because he spent his entire life, you know, making gaffes. Obviously, he'll have his own vulnerabilities in the run. But again, for us, look, you know, if he takes – he'll be a serious candidate. I don't know if he's necessarily the instant front runner, but he's the instant guy you got to take serious. Clearly, a bunch of the Obama team is going to be – covertly or overtly helping him. And boy, you know, we're talking about an all knockdown, drag out brawl because, you know, Hillary ain't going down quietly, right? And
right.
So we're going to talk about a fantastic fight. And I think, obviously, interesting, like, it'll be interesting to see Biden go up against Clinton arguing with each other without critiquing the Obama record, right? And so if we want to make the case that Obama policies have failed and it's time to move in a different direction, this seems like a really great your development for us. So I'm in a pretty cheery mood this morning, Greg.
It kind of puts Hillary in a campaign pickle beyond all her legal issues because her basic strategy has probably been to stay close to Obama long enough to get the nomination and then in the general election create differences if Obama doesn't get any more popular between then and Election Day. But with Biden in the race, she's got to become the outsider, which is laughable. So that really kind of puts her in a quandary in terms of strategy.
It'll be interesting to see that. First of all, I mean, you keep in mind how much Hillary has gone negative in her career, right? I mean, the Clintons, you know, have this ability to be real nasty when it comes to politics. They have very sharp elbows. And I've heard some people kind of argue, actually, Biden can be that way, too. And the moment, you know, he's a figure who most Democrats are going to sympathize with. And it'd be very tough to see, you know, it's very easy to see this backfiring on Hillary and the Clinton team and the Sid Blumenthals and the David Brocks and that crew going after Biden in the wrong way and really just kind of stirring up some lingering bad blood. This could really affect Hillary's long-term legacy within the Democratic Party.
Amazing. All right, on to the bad martini now. Jim, and it's been almost 3 weeks since that first Republican presidential debate in Cleveland, which was a very interesting and in some ways entertaining debate, but quickly got overshadowed by Donald Trump's reaction to Megyn Kelly's question, particularly as it related to his treatment of women. A lot of people thought he went way over the line in how he reacted to that on Twitter. His supporters, of course, thought it was an inappropriate question at a debate and so forth. But within a couple of days, it seemed like the thing had blown over. Trump had talked to Roger Ailes. Trump had stopped talking about it. Megyn Kelly didn't say much about it. She moved on. Then she went on vacation for about a week and a half, and she was back for the first time Monday. And apparently, Donald Trump decided it was time to target Megyn Kelly again, because here we go with the series of tweets. At Megyn Kelly must have had a terrible vacation. She's really off her game. Was afraid to confront Dr. Cornel West. No clue on immigration. I like the Kelly file much better without at Megyn Kelly. Perhaps she should take another 11-day unscheduled vacation. And then he retweeted a bunch of things, such as, Megyn needs to go on vacation. What a waste of an hour on Fox. She has come back looking like Nancy Grace. Show has become an opinion show with leading questions. And then the B word is back. The bimbo back in town. I hope not for long. Again, he retweeted that. He didn't say it, but he still did retweet it. So, Jim, just when we thought we were able to actually focus on some issues and other things related to this campaign, we're back where we started at the beginning of the month.
Here we go again. If you're tired of people like me complaining about Donald Trump, or if you're tired of his fan base insisting that he's always right and nothing he says is too much or beyond the pale or unacceptable or unworthy of our politics or anything like that, sorry, here we go again. You know, here's the thing. Of all the things we could argue about Donald Trump, most people would agree this is among the least productive. This is the least illuminating. It's entirely in the eyes of the beholder. Some people are going to say, oh, calling Megyn Kelly is completely okay. A bimbo is completely okay. And some people are going to say, no, this is not what a commander-in-chief is supposed to be doing. To say nothing of the fact of whether it's smart politics, to be getting into a, I'm going to say griping match, and people can probably think of other words I want to use there, with an anchor on Fox News. And, you know, Roger Stone, one of Trump's, you know, right-hand man for a really long time, left the campaign because he gets so frustrated with the way Trump was pursuing his nomination. Now, some people have speculated, look, Roger Stone is still singing Trump's praises. People wonder just how serious that split is. But I don't see why picking the scab off of this is going to do Trump any good, whether it's going to do Fox News. I guess it makes them more part of the conversation. But I don't know. Greg, do you think a big topic in November 2016 is going to be, do you think Megyn Kelly is a bimbo? I mean, if that's a decisive issue, then yeah, Trump's got this in the bag. He's got it nailed down. But it just seems like, even by the standards of folks who'd want to see Trump building support, this seems like just going over the same ground over again. But I guess nobody tells Donald Trump how to run his campaign.
I guess not. Oh, man. Well, Donald Trump's campaign apparently is dictating how another campaign is running, and probably several other campaigns. Let's focus, though, on Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, who in the past couple of days has engaged in some head-scratching commentary. First of all, he had three different positions on birthright citizenship over a seven-day span. First, he was against it. Then, after Trump came out with his plan calling for an end to birthright citizenship, Walker said he was for it. And then by the weekend, he didn't have an opinion and said that if we take care of securing the border and doing everything else to enforce the existing law, that the birthright citizenship issue would take care of itself. Now, as a result of the issue with the Chinese, economic chaos and its resulting chaos on Wall Street, CNN reports Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker is calling on President Barack Obama to cancel Chinese President Xi Jinping's September visit to Washington, channeling Donald Trump's attacks on the United States' biggest Asian trading partner, basically saying that it's time for President Obama to use some backbone, and we don't need pomp and circumstance when you factor in the economic chaos with the cyber attacks, the militarization in the South China Sea. We need some serious action rather than just a lot of nice photo ops. So, Jim, he's right about the fact there's a lot of serious issues to deal with the Chinese. But once again, he just appears to be in this Me Too phase as he tries to figure out how to catch up to Donald Trump, particularly in Iowa.
It seems not as coherent as we're used to seeing from Scott Walker. And I say this is a guy who thinks pretty highly of him, but it just one of the things he had objected to in his, or, you know, I mean, making the case for canceling the summit or canceling the meeting with the Chinese leaders was the idea that the Chinese are you know, intervening in their economy. Yeah, they're communists. It's kind of what they do, you know, and we don't like that, but they've been doing that for a really long time. Continued state interference with its economy. That's kind of baked in the cake of China. It'd be great to see them go into a much further direction of economic liberalism. And, you know, and I suppose you could construe Walker's comment as a complain about currency manipulation and things like that. Kevin Williamson, my colleague, raised an objection to this. And I said, well, he did mention, you know, the militarization in the South China Sea, the OPM hack and persecution of Christians and human rights activists. So like he did have other legitimate reasons. I think a bigger question is, if we want to stop China from doing things, do we have better influence with the summit or without the summit? If you bring him to Washington and you say, hey, you know, Mr. President, we got some real problems here. You got to knock this off. Maybe it does good. Maybe it doesn't. If you cancel the summit, I suppose that would definitely be seen as a snub. On the other hand, it's very easy to imagine China taking the snub badly and choosing to escalate or do something else. You're right. It seems very reactive and responsive. And besides that, we kind of know Obama's not going to cancel the summit. Right. So I'm not really sure how much good it does to say, you know, we might as well just say, you know, Mr. President, you should not support the Iran deal. Yeah, he shouldn't. You know, he's you know, you're not going to change his mind, right? You're not going to alter his decision making. So it seems, you know, to use a really inappropriate Asian metaphor, kabuki theater. You know, right. It's kind of rehearsed, organized. Everybody knows how this is going to shake out. It just seems underwhelming from Scott Walker. And you mentioned the other examples of him kind of, you know, wavering a little bit. He was anti-ethanol, now he's for it, and things like that. It just doesn't seem like we're seeing the Scott Walker who we quote-unquote fell in love with when he was governor of Wisconsin and standing up to the unions and all that kind of stuff. He just seems very reactive, very responsive, and just not what we've gotten used to. And hopefully he'll get back on track in the coming weeks because, you know, he's a guy who was once in a solid second place and pushing to be front runner. Has really kind of slipped back to the middle of the pack and, you know, it's got to start standing out pretty soon.
Yeah, he certainly does. And whatever you want to say about Trump, and there's certainly plenty to say in both sides on how he's conducted his campaign, the people we thought a few months ago were going to be at the very top of the heap here are not reacting very well, because you've got that with Walker, and then you had Jeb Bush back and forth on the anchor baby issue. And yesterday he said he was talking about Asians when he referred to anchor babies. So he's definitely got the
Did Jeb Bush think by saying that most people say, oh, okay. Right. All right. That's cool. Don't worry.
Yeah. The supposed top tier definitely off their game at the moment. So we'll see how it goes, if they can ever adjust here in the coming weeks. But
yeah, by the way, I'm going to observe. Like, I understand people saying that, you know, one of the lines you hear is that anchor babies is an offensive term. Okay, let me know what non-offensive term. You know, for people who come here who are not here legally and have a child, you know, so the child becomes an American citizen to help start building the ties to become a citizen down the road. What do you want to call that? I believe Ancora Americans is the phrase. Maybe some people would prefer. Ancora is Latin for anchor, by the way. So, you know, that's my little way of, if you're subtle enough with the joke, you can get through it there. So
nicely.
Anyway, yes, but again, you know, Jeb Bush, like. Give him a little more caffeine in there, some of that Cuban coffee or something like that. It just seemed a little, you know, all right, guys, step it up. I know it's summertime, but, you know, people are coming back. Next debate's in September. This is preseason football, all right? We're getting late in the preseason. Time to start, you know, kicking up and get ready for the regular season here. And some of these guys just seem to be a little sloppier, a lot of penalties, a lot of false starts, you should say.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got to trim down the roster pretty soon. So
there you go. Yeah. Cuts are coming, guys.
That was Jim. Have a great
book.
Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.